So let me say at the outset, this is not a message that is a critique of our government, the 84 people running for president in a couple years, or any of that. In fact, I'm hoping it'll do something. I'm hoping what it'll do is help us to look at a scenario and recognize human nature has not changed, and that all of us have a responsibility before God on how we react to things that are happening. We're going to be watching in this, hearing in this story about how Jesus, we've been doing this series, Jesus Went. We've looked at all different kind of groups of people that Jesus met with, individuals, and how he treated them in their different circumstances. This is going to be looking at Jesus last week and the political powers that he addressed. There are three, maybe four, but one is Pilate, who was the governor of the Jerusalem area. There's Herod, who was the king of the region. There was the Jewish council that railroaded Jesus into the mess that he was in from a human standpoint, and then there was the crowd. And what I'm hoping that all of us will do is that we'll look at this and ask ourselves, where would I have fit in here? How do I make my decisions? How are my choices governed? And see if there's a group you identify with, at least in some ways. And let me just go through some definitions real quick, because we can use words regularly, and sometimes we're operating from a different framework. So this is the definitions I'm using. The first is the word politics. Politics is the opinions and the policies, actions, and ideas and all that are used to either gain power or to influence that power. And we live in probably one of the most politically charged places in the country. We're used to this. But it's the opinions, ideas, policies, and actions that are held onto by those in power or those trying to get those in power to do what they want. For some of us, politics is the most important thing around. That's all we read. I mean, we thrive on it. Others look at it on the other side of the spectrum as the most evil thing in the world. And then in the middle somewhere, we see it as a necessary evil. You have to have it. It's weird, and all the and whenever we say all politicians are, we've fallen into a weird kind of stereotype. Politics, in and of itself, is neutral. It's the character and the values and the attitudes that are taken into the process that really matter. Second word I want to look at is the word citizenship. And that's the rights and responsibilities of those that are members of a nation. And you're going to see in the story as we look at this last week of Jesus' life, you're going to look at how Rome operates. If Jesus had been a Roman citizen, this would have been entirely different. Roman citizens, one of the big perks of being a Roman citizen is you were given due process. You were kind of what we do here is where you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, and there's a process to go through that. Jesus wasn't afforded that. He was not a Roman citizen. Rome was the occupying nation at the time. They were in power. The Jews had some autonomy, but it wasn't ultimate autonomy. And so when you see Pilate deal with this, he's actually, in some ways, he's giving more attention to this than normally would be deserved. Jesus being a Jew, though, before the Jewish council, there were certain rights and things he should have been afforded that were completely stripped away. It was a mock trial. Everything that could be broken was. He was horribly mistreated by the Jewish standard. But the council had their own agenda, and that leads to this next word. The word is ambition. Oh, let me say this too. As we're thinking about this, we're also going to be seeing how a crowd operates in this, and how a crowd can be turned in 5 days from one side to a complete other side. And for us that are Americans, a part of our citizenship is we get a chance to speak into leaders. We get a chance to evaluate, and we get to vote and all this kind of stuff. Half of us never vote. Most of us complain, but a lot of us don't really do much about it. And so there's something here about that, about our citizenship, and we'll deal with that another time. But the third word I want to look at is the word ambition. And ambition just means an eagerness to achieve a desired goal. And again, the key thing here is the goal. What goals do I have? And you're going to see this played out with Pilate, King Herod. You're going to see it with the council. And I think in some ways you're going to see it with the crowd, but you're also going to see it with Jesus. Ambition and the goals that they're being pursued really do change the trajectory. So let's get into this. This is Palm Sunday. This is this is the day we commemorate. Jesus has entered into Jerusalem. And enters into Jerusalem as a hero. He is being celebrated, which causes his enemies to ramp up their plan. Their plan was all along, as Jesus became more and more popular, as he was showing just how corrupt they were. They had to get rid of him. Their power was being threatened, their influence in the culture was, their livelihoods. And if they could get rid of Jesus, they saw this, and they had convinced themselves, and this is what happens when we tell ourselves something over and over again, nonsense starts to make sense. Lies begin to feel truthful. And so I can start off somewhere against something, and after a while, in my own mind, I can justify, in this case, they could justify Jesus being murdered, because they played it, well, obviously, that must be God's will. It wasn't, but they convinced themselves, and they had their own mentality going on here. And so they bribed Jesus, one of his closest friends, Judas, and Judas betrays Jesus, and he did it in a very specific way. It was done in a non-public setting, because they knew that if they did their power play in front of the crowds. How many of us hear about big news that comes out on Friday evening? A lot of times, bad news, political bad news, comes out on Friday evening because the news cycle is off. Because you really want to be careful. And then stock reports, all this kind of stuff. We try to find a time where it's not going to get as much press. And in this case, they found Jesus in a private place. Judas betrays him. Jesus is arrested. He's taken before this council. And they go through a mockery of a trial. And then they conclude together, he should be killed. They don't have the power to do it because, remember, Rome is in charge. So these just Jewish council, they go to Pilate, a guy they despise. He's the governor of the area. He's got the power. And they're going to go to him and say, look, here's our case. You need to execute this guy. And this is where it picks up. It says, then the entire council took Jesus to Pilate, the Roman governor. They began to state their case. This man has been leading our people astray by telling them not to pay their taxes to the Roman government, claiming he's the Messiah, a king. So Pilate asked Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus replied, you've said it. I want to stop at this. First of all, there are lies that have been told already. Jesus never, in fact, he said the opposite. He goes, render to Caesar what is Caesar's. You pay the taxes you owe. He was not anti-tax. He was also not trying to compete with Caesar. He wasn't trying to come in and start a political or military kingdom. These were two lies that were twisting things, trying to get Pilate to say, oh, well, it's in the best interest of Rome and my career to get rid of this guy. Pilate doesn't like him. We'll see why in a few minutes. And so he asked Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus just said, it's just as you say. Very clearly he responds to Pilate. He doesn't get into a long discourse. He doesn't try to take, you know, the Old Testament and bring him up to speed. He just says, that's it. And there's a respect that Jesus paid to Pilate that is interesting, and we're going to see that contrasted in a minute to how he treated and how he responded to Herod. Pilate turned to the leading priest, it goes on to say, and to the crowd, and he said, I find nothing wrong with this man. Then they became insistent. But he is causing riots. Again, another lie. Jesus never caused a riot. He's causing riots by his teaching wherever he goes, all over Judea, from Galilee to Jerusalem. And then the light bulb goes off for Pilate. Oh, is he a Galilean? Pilate asked. When they said that he was, Pilate sent him to Herod Antipas because Galilee was under Herod's jurisdiction and Herod happened to be in Jerusalem at the time. Pilate was very astute. He's thinking, I don't want to get into all this. Oh, the king of the area is nearby. I'm going to pass him off to him. This happens a lot of times. Some of you are in jobs where someone doesn't want to deal with the difficult things, so they pass it on to someone else as a favor to themselves. And that's exactly what Pilate did. We're seeing political power plays happen all through this. The council, Pilate, and the Jewish leaders, and I want to see if I can make this clear, they were deeply concerned about their community status. They were very concerned about their very livelihoods. Because if people began following Jesus and his teaching, people weren't going to need these guys. Jesus was clearly teaching in a way that resonated people. It started to make sense to them. It wasn't high and lofty, and there were traditions and rituals and all, but that wasn't the main point. The council of these priests and leaders were corrupt, and they saw, and you see this, it happens in human nature all the time. You give people enough power without accountability, and they can abuse that power. We've seen it play out in churches throughout history. This is a picture of what was happening here. They painted Jesus as a threat to Rome, lying and all this, and partly due to Pilate seeing it was just misrepresenting the facts, and the other is he just hated these guys, and he wasn't going to get involved in the squabble. He passes it on to Herod. And listen to this. And by the way, this Herod Antipas, he was the son of Herod the Great. Herod the Great was around early on when Jesus was born. He's the one that had all the babies in Bethlehem, 2 years old and under, slaughtered because he didn't want a rival. This is his son. Antipas had every bit of his father's bad qualities plus a bunch more. If you read about him in the New Testament, you find out that he had a brother, Philip, and he really liked Philip's wife, so he took her. Made it even weirder because Philip's wife was also Herod's niece. So there's a bunch of weird stuff going on. The wife that he took, Herodias was her name, she was pretty powerful in and of herself. John the Baptist, who was the one that was a forerunner for Jesus, John the Baptist is Jesus' cousin, and he spoke about how Herod never should have taken on his brother-in-law's wife. And Herodias got so angry about that there was a power play made there, and John the Baptist lost his head over it, was executed. Herod has now begun thinking, he's been hearing about Jesus, and his superstition comes up, and he's thinking, wait a minute, has John come back to life? Is this Jesus really John? He was a mess. But listen to this. So Pilate sends Jesus to Herod. He goes, Herod was delighted at the opportunity to see Jesus because he had heard about him and had been hoping for a long time to see him perform a miracle. He was thinking, man, I can have a great party and we've got entertainment. He asked Jesus question after question, but Jesus refused to answer. With Pilate, Jesus answered his question. With Herod, he chose to be silent. And the reason was he wasn't going to play this game and he wasn't going to be a pawn in the show that Herod wanted. He knew what Herod was like. Meanwhile, during this meeting with Herod, the leading priests and teachers of religious law were shouting their accusations. Then Herod and his soldiers began mocking and ridiculing Jesus. Finally, they put a royal robe on him and sent him back to Pilate. And this is a perfect parenthetical statement. It says, Herod and Pilate, who had been enemies before, became friends that day. Using Jesus as this political pawn. And this is, in many cases, this is how it works. I've all of a sudden made a friend in our own kind of dysfunction. And the thing about Herod is that his role as king was to promote justice, and he completely violated that, couldn't have cared less. All he wanted was to play the game. Jesus wouldn't play, so he sends him back. Now he's back with Pilate. And Pilate's disgust with the Jewish council is growing now. He really hates these guys, and they don't like him either. Says this, then Pilate called together the leading priests and other religious leaders along with all the people. So now it's become more public. This is in a forum where others can hear what's going on and catch up. Pilate says, you brought this man to me, accusing him of leading a revolt. I have examined him thoroughly on this point in your presence and find him innocent." So he's come up with his conclusion, his verdict. He is the judge here. He's the governor. This is it. This should completely wipe it out. He said, "Herod came to the same conclusion and sending back to us. Nothing this man has done calls for the death penalty, so I will have him flogged and I will release him." And this is interesting. Flogging, it wasn't like just a couple slaps. I mean, they were going to really beat him to a pulp, and he was willing to do that, just kind of throwing a bone to the council. Jesus didn't deserve to be executed. Pilate wasn't going to do that, but he would beat him just as a way to kind of do a political favor for them and get him out of his hair. But the priests and religious leaders would have nothing to do with that. They were adamant. Their ambition, their goal, was Jesus needs to be gone. A beaten up Jesus is going to heal back up, and then we're going to be back where we were. We're not going to have it. Part of the reason they were so adamant about this and why they hated Pilate, Pilate had been governor for a while, and he had done a number of things that had irritated them, but the primary one was this. At some point, there was a water project going on in Jerusalem where they were, where they do water flow and sewage and all this kind of stuff, and so Pilate could have used his own money for it, but then that would have come out of his pocket, or at least what he could tap into as the governor. So instead, what he did is he raided the temple, and he took the temple treasury and used that to pay for this water project. You can imagine how angry it made him. And the thing is, the Jewish people didn't have anything they could do, because remember, they're occupied by Rome. Rome's in charge. They can do basically anything they want. This was kind of out of the ordinary. It's not typical, but they are angry at this, and they're going to exact their revenge. They want to get rid of Jesus, and they want to put Pilate in his place. And so the leaders, and I mean this deliberately, they are hell-bent on having Jesus killed and Pilate to lose this battle. So they begin stirring up the crowd. They start saying stuff that, again, is not true. Oh, you know, Jesus told people not to pay their taxes, or he wants to do this. And if we let him keep going, Rome is going to come clamp down on us, and we are going to be toast. To get rid of Jesus will prevent a lot of problems for us. And the crowd buys into this stuff. It says, "Then a mighty roar rose from the crowd, and with one voice they shouted." And listen, this is the same group that just less than a week earlier had celebrated Jesus coming in. They have now allowed some political maneuvering to go, and they've gone from celebrating him to wanting him to be crucified and killed. "With one voice they shouted, 'Kill him and release Barabbas to us.'" Barabbas was in prison for taking part in an insurrection in Jerusalem against he was a real insurrectionist. He was really trying to get them to break away from Rome, and he had murdered. And the custom at the time was, at this time of year, Passover, you could let one prisoner go. People could vote on that. They're willing to take this guy that had already been convicted of murder and insurrection for Jesus, who just had a bunch of rumors being passed around him. What it shows is crowds can be very, very fickle, and they can follow personalities more than facts. That has not changed in history. We get a lot of data a lot quicker now, but it's not necessarily well vetted data. Some of us can get ramped up about something real quick, and then we find out, oh, that wasn't true. But this is something we've got to be careful about, because we see it in this crowd, and it's easy to say, oh, those people were stupid. Well, if we look in the mirror, some of us do exactly the same thing. We can be so driven by personalities that sound very, very powerful and convincing without really looking at the truth or hunting for the facts or reserving judgment until we know better. They kept shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." For the third time, Pilate demanded, "Why? What crime has he committed?" Remember, he's already established his verdict. He's already made his judgment. He goes, "I found no reason to sentence him to death, so I'll have him flogged and I'll release him." He said, "Look, have you forgot about the flogging part? We're really good floggers here. We can beat this guy up. Let's go with that. Maybe you missed it the first time I said it. But things are really getting out of control now. The crowd is coming to a point where they're about to riot. And the thing for Pilate is, if the crowd gets out of control, if there's a riot, and word gets back to Rome that he can't control his governing, he's gone. Pilate's ambition is to keep his job and hopefully to get higher and higher and higher in the government. Council's ambition, we got to get rid of Jesus to protect our livelihood. Pilate, I want to protect my job and move up. So now he's in a squeeze. And the council knows it. They like it. But it's going to get even harder. Just then, as Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him this message: "Leave that innocent man alone. I suffered through a terrible nightmare about him last night." Sometimes we forget that God is able to work behind the scenes. And he can do that in dreams. He can do that in unusual events happening at just a perfect time. In this case, Pilate's wife, don't know anything about her background, but there was something going on. She's really disturbed about this. She knows Jesus is innocent too. Pilate's talked to her about it. He's concerned because he's got this political power play coming at him. There's riots being threatened. And she knows he's maybe waffling. And she goes, "Whatever you do, don't harm this innocent man." Pilate still has the opportunity to do the right and honorable and just thing. That's his job, by the way. He's certain Jesus is innocent. There's never a question about that. He knows the religious leaders want him executed out of their own envy and selfish ambition, but he decides to abdicate his responsibility because of his own selfish ambition, to keep his job and move up the ladder. Goes on to say, but the mob shouted louder and louder, demanding that Jesus be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate sentenced Jesus to die as they demanded. As they had requested, he released Barabbas, the man in prison for insurrection and murder, but he turned Jesus over to them to do as they wished. Whenever I am really, really tired, emotionally tired, worn out, or whatever, one of my favorite things to do is watch old movies. And I say old movies, any movie where it's pretty clear there are good people and bad people in it. The modern ones, you just don't know. I mean, I don't, anyway. And most of the time, I really like watching old Westerns. And when I say old, like from the 70s and 80s. Usually, there's the good side and the bad side, and almost always, the good side prevails. I know it's very simplistic. Look, I'm from West Virginia. But for me, I like something that, I like seeing a good conclusion. One of the movies I've liked over time, I mean, I really like Tombstone, but the other one is Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner. It's not the best movie, but there's a scene in it that I really, really like, and it reminds me of this. There was a time, it's near the end of the movie, story is told. Costner is the sheriff, is Wyatt Earp. And he's got a guy arrested. A guy has been accused of murdering someone, but hadn't been to trial yet. And the mob has decided, we need to get rid of this guy. So they come down, they have a noose, they got guns, they got torches. It always happens at night. And they're showing up at the sheriff's door, and they say, "Sheriff, stand aside. We're gonna take care of this guy." If Pilate had been there, he would have said, "Look, why don't I just slap him around a little bit? Will that be okay?" And they're not going to be appeased by that. Pilate would have finally said, "Well, you can have him. I like being sheriff, and I'm hoping to become governor one day." That's not what Kevin Costner's Wyatt Earp did. He stood on there with his guns, and he goes, "You know what? You guys will probably take me. But before that happens, I'm going to take you, and you, and you, and you. You ready?" He didn't back down. Whether this guy was guilty or not wasn't his call. It was the judge's call. There was something about truth and justice and honor and all this, and he was willing to put his life on the line to defend it. I love stuff like that. I don't even know if it may probably made it up, but I still like watching it. And I'll probably watch it next weekend. Pilate could have done the right thing, and he chose not to. because he had his own selfish ambition, and that ambition had nothing to do beyond his self-preservation. If anything got in the way of that, he was going to back away. So Pilate saw he wasn't getting anywhere and that a riot was developing, so he sent for a bowl of water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood, the responsibility is yours." There's a truth to this and there's a lie to it. The responsibility, yes. The crowd is stuck with that. They're going to be responsible, but Pilate is too, because that was his job. Jesus' blood was on all of their hands. No amount of water or soap or alcohol was going to take this stain away. Their responsibility was there. So here's the bottom line for this. Pilate, the council, and Herod's selfish ambition led them to abandon their duties. They had responsibilities. They were charged with certain ways to operate, and they chose not to. Instead of choosing to use their power and their influence as their positions required and as it was deserved, they decided that their own self-interest were more important. And self-interest was their driving motive. Contrast that with Jesus. Jesus' singular ambition led him to fulfill his duty. And make no mistake about it, it was costly. When you look, and we're going to be doing this Thursday and Friday of this coming week as we prepare for Easter. When you look at Jesus and the struggle he had to do the right thing, we forget sometimes, we think, well, he was God. He was also fully human too. There was a time when he was under such intense internal pressure to do this and go through with. What he knew was he knew Judas was going to betray him. He knew there was going to be this mock trial. He knew he was going to be horribly beaten, rejected. He knew he was going to be executed. He said he was under such physical stress and emotional stress that he was actually bleeding through the sweat pores in his skin. He understands that. But his singular ambition was to fulfill the duty his father gave him, not for his own self-preservation. Listen to Jesus' resolve prior to him arriving in Jerusalem this time. He said, "So Jesus said, 'When you have lifted up the Son of Man,'" a term he used for himself, "on the cross, then you will understand that I am he." I am God. I am divine. The same thing he agreed with Pilate. I am the Messiah. He goes on to say, "I do nothing on my own, but say only what the Father taught me. And the one who sent me is with me. He has not deserted me, for I always do what pleases him." Jesus entrusted himself to his Father when things were good and when things were not good. He did what pleased his Father, even when the path was going to lead to horrible, horrible pain and difficulty. And here's the thing that we need to hang on to this. If we're followers of Jesus, he sets the pace for us. The choice I have is this. I can choose happiness right now, but if I do that, most of the time I'm going to jettison holiness. Holiness just means to live a life set apart for God's purposes. If I pursue holiness now, I may go through some difficulty, but ultimately it will lead to happiness. So I've got a choice. I can pursue happiness at the expense of holiness, and I'll be on my own. I will not be with God's care and protection, and it'll end up miserable. Or I can choose holiness now, and there may be some temporary misery in this, but there will be joy. There will be joy at the end of that that nothing can compare to. So as we head into this week, I want you to think about this. Think about your life right now, the responsibilities you have, the choices that are on your plate, the things that you're toying with. Those of us that are followers of Jesus, are you pursuing the holy choice? That is, mean I'm set apart for God's use. So what would honor, what would please him, what would give him pleasure in my life? Or do I tend more toward, this is what I want, and I'm going to figure out a way to make it okay? That might mean I just don't want to find out what God says about it, or I want to say, well, I'm sure he'll wink at this because it's not as bad as what these people are doing. That's where politics really helps us a lot. We have all kinds of people we can point to that are doing worse than we are. What am I going to do? What is my personal ambition? How would God look at my ambition? Would he say my ambition is it's growing to be more and more honoring and pleasing him? Or is it, does I tend to just, I'm just going to do what I want to do because I want to? 2 Corinthians 5:9, this is what we'll close with. It says, cheerfully pleasing God is the main thing. And that's what we aim to do, regardless of our conditions. Sooner or later, we all have to face God regardless of these conditions. We will appear before Christ and take what's coming to us as a result of our actions, either good or bad. I would say this, that cheerfully pleasing God is not something I have to do. It's something I get to do. If it's really true that he sacrificed his life to take the penalty of my sin and he was resurrected, proving that he did have that power, every promise he makes is good, that he would do that for me and allow me into his family, doesn't that mean that I get to cheerfully follow him? I don't have to. He's done the work. However, here's the deal. If I'm a follower of Jesus and I choose to pursue my own selfish ambition, I'm on my own. God's not going to bless me. God will not honor that. He may not write me out of his family, but there'll be pain and misery and suffering as a result of those choices. He does not wink at my selfish choices. Choice is ours. And as we walk through this week, we're going to be able to see some things that really help us understand just how dearly he loves us and just how great an opportunity is to live our lives just to make him proud. Let's pray. God, please, if we begin merely looking at this as an exercise of history and critiquing Herod and Pilate and the council and the crowd without looking at ourselves and saying, I wonder what role I might have played. I wonder how much selfish ambition plays into my life, how much political power moves I've really bought into. God, help us to learn from these examples, but to decide that we're going to do what we need to do. For those of us that know you, we have a big brother in our Savior that showed us how to live with your honor at the forefront. For anyone here that doesn't yet know you, I pray that over these next days, that the reality will set in, that there's a God that loves us dearly, a God that cared so much that he came and did for us what we could never do for ourselves. And rather than us trying to be good enough, that he will take away our sin if we ask and choose to follow. Amen.